In my quest to pursue a righteous life, unfortunately, very often I am very blind. And in my blindness, I hurt other people, I hurt myself, and I am not pursuing my faith. Interestingly enough, a word that comes to mind for me that carries me through very often and that God has given me is courage. It takes courage to face into our blindness.
Welcome to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of McKenzie Study Center. Our hosts are Dr. Jack Crabtree and Christine Barber. Jack is a teacher at McKenzie Study Center and Gutenberg College in Eugene, Oregon. By training, Jack is a philosopher, but his real passion is the Bible, having studied and taught it for more than 25 years. Christine is a licensed marriage and family therapist, having practiced for over 20 years in California and Oregon. Along with her husband Larry, she is employed by the Caris Foundation, a teaching and counseling ministry. In this series, titled Christianity at Work in Relationships, Jack and Christine discuss how God teaches us to trust Him through the experiences of everyday life. Here now are Jack and Christine.
This is the second program in our series on Christianity at Work in Relationships. We are coming back to this series, actually. We were doing Christianity at Work in Relationships right when we began the program, and we decided that it would be just kind of nice human interest, very important issues to talk about because we're all involved in relationships. And in fact, it is in the context of relationships that Christianity works itself out. So relationships are really vitally important to understand, to think about, because we're called to love other people. And loving other people is not a very straightforward thing. It's not an easy thing. It looks different with different people at different times. Would you agree with me, Jack, that this is kind of a fundamental part of life as a Christian?
Yeah, I would. There's a passage that has struck me since I've understood it, or since at least I think I understand it, that is very striking. It's typically, I think, misunderstood, where Paul writes in Ephesians 6, "Our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places." It seems to me that, rightly understood, what he's talking about there is we may see the real arena in which I live my life and work out my life as being relationships. But he wants us to see that the struggle, the fight for our faith, is the real arena, is the real struggle of our life, the real goal of our life. Actually, I didn't say that right. Let me back up. What's the goal of my Christian experience? Faith. To persist in the faith, he's saying. What is the arena? Relationships. Flesh and blood relationships. We'd have to unpack that verse to show how I get there, but I think that's what he's saying there. The arena is relationships. The goal is faith.
But it says in that passage that it's not against... Please read that again.
It's not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness.
So I'll stop you. It sounds like it's the opposite of what you're saying, that it's not against flesh and blood. It's not against relationships like between you and I, Jack, but it's against something that's much bigger than us, something that we can't see, like radio waves.
Yeah. Well, when we take that verse out of context, I think it's really easy to misunderstand what he's saying. It sounds like what he's saying is... we've got this goal to reach, we've got this fight to fight, we've got this battle to win, and it's not against mere mortal human beings that we could control and slay and manipulate to get where we want. The forces arrayed against us are much more powerful and much more insidious, and you're not going to be able to do it on your own. You're going to need spiritual armor in order to win this battle. That's what it sounds like it's saying.
Absolutely.
But I think if we put it in its context, what he's actually saying is, because the verse before it is, put on the full armor of God that you may be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. And the point that he's making is, what's arrayed against us are forces of evil that want to prevent us from getting to the appropriate goal, namely the perseverance of our faith. That's the standing firm that keeps coming up over and over and over again in Ephesians 6. That there's all kinds of devices, strategies, schemes to seduce us away from the truth of the gospel to invest ourselves in something that this world has to offer, to not believe the ultimate reality, the ultimate truth of what God is up to ignore that, to discount that, to not value that, and go a different direction in my life.
And not just as a general goal, but in the process of our living our life out.
Yes.
Of faith is a daily thing.
A daily thing, exactly. Yeah.
It's a every conversation kind of thing.
Right.
It's every decision kind of thing.
Right. So I think when he turns in and says, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rules, against the powers, and so on, our struggle is against flesh and blood in a sense, but the point that he's making is, but that's not our real problem. Our real problem are the schemes, devices, and tactics of the evil forces arrayed against us that are kind of back behind the scenes. Let me give you an example. If I'm having some kind of tension, some kind of difficulty, some kind of problem in my marriage with my wife, the natural way to see the problem is, I've got to get this relationship fixed. That's the problem. She's got to change. Maybe I've got to change.
Probably her, right?
Yeah. We've got to work, get this thing worked out. And if we get this worked out so that our life goes better, our life is more harmonious, then we've won. I mean, then we've fixed things. Then we have been victorious. Then everything is okay. What Paul, I think, is saying is, no, there's probably 50 ways to fix the relationship. There's only one way to keep the faith. That my real battle is not in solving the interpersonal relationships. The real battle is in interacting in the interpersonal relationships in a way that doesn't ultimately make me compromise my faith. That's the real battle of life, is to do it with integrity, to do it according to truth, to do it according to wisdom, to do it according in a way that is compatible with my believing the gospel and living my life in the light of the gospel.
And not getting seduced by the powers that would lead me to be selfish.
Right.
That would encourage me to be sinful.
Yeah.
That help me want to be contemptuous. That would make me think that I'm better than the other person. Those are the evil forces that are trying to get me to turn my head away from what is it that I do to really care about my spouse, to how do I really look at and care about me? What comes to mind, of course, for me is Eve. The problem wasn't, is she going to eat this apple or not, as much as the forces that she was listening to that were drawing away from doing what she knew to be right.
Yes.
And then encouraging Adam to do the same thing. So I think what you're saying is we need to take it off an easy solution type answer to something that is far more difficult. It's much more of a gray area to work with. You're not saying, I don't look at and try to work with my relationship, because that is very important, but you're saying, how do I do it?
Right.
What's my goal here? My goal isn't just to come up with a solution, but my goal is to figure out how to love the other person when there's all these forces around me trying to get me to go in a direction other than loving that person. Is that what you're saying?
Right, exactly. Loving that person, and in this context, loving and obeying God, living my life in the light of truth, which entails loving the other person. But
that's kind of where
more
we live our life out, is in relationship with ourselves and with other people.
Right. That's what's so striking about this verse, is that by saying it's not against flesh and blood, he's acknowledging that that's exactly the arena in which my faith has to be worked out. Because he's saying, I take it for granted that the real issues in your life involve relationships, but you've got to see past the relationships to realize that there's even more going on than just the relationships. There's your own soul here. How you interact with that person in that relationship is ultimately about, do you love God? Are you seeking to obey God? Do you love the truth? Are you seeking to live your life in the light of the truth? That's even a more important issue in the final analysis than the relationship itself. Because the relationship will take care of itself if you solve your problem. The problem of your soul, the problem of your obedience to God.
Oh, Jack, you make it sound too easy sometimes, and I'm just not going to go with you there.
Okay.
Yes, I think there needs to be something that's settled and settled and resettled and then resettled again, and that's where do I want to really go in my life? And if I have in mind for myself, I want to pursue goodness, then it really does answer a lot of questions for me. When I am frustrated or angry or upset about something that's going on between my husband and I, many times I have to set myself down and say, okay, Christine, what do you really want? Do you want to pursue God or do you just want to be angry at your husband today? And that will help me set the stage for me to start going in a good direction rather than going in a selfish direction which says, well, no, it's obvious that if I said no, I really don't want to serve God, I really doesn't care to me, matter to me what God thinks about this. I just want what I want when I want it and I go for that. Obviously, I have been seduced by the powers of darkness and I'm going to have a totally different result. But let's assume that I have decided I want to pursue what God wants and work against the powers that are very strong and outside and inside of me that want to pull me into darkness. Agree with me there? You're shaking your head yes, but nobody can
see. So far.
Maybe you're just pondering, okay, where's Christine going? What's going on? Okay. See, one of these things about Jack is that he doesn't really give me all this feedback that's important to me, so I have to know, okay, come on, Jack. What's going on? Okay. It's just my insecurities coming out all over the place. All right.
Kind of nod is that, Jack?
What are you talking about? And you kind of look up, and you're it's kind of like you're accessing some visual image. I'm wondering what this image is. Anyway, so let's say that I've want to head in the direction of doing what's good.
Uh-huh.
Well, then I really do have to work out kind of a strategy of how to get there. And it really does matter in working out that strategy that it really is important how I go about doing that. What I could do is just say, well, deny that there's a problem, Christine. Don't even look. Don't even notice that Larry is different than you or is bothering you in this way, or just let it be okay. After all, you shouldn't be angry. After all, you should just be above that. After all, you need to just give it up. I don't know. I'm trying to think of lots of different ways that I might just kind of erase it.
Yeah,
deny the problem.
Just shut up, blank your mind out, and obey. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but I think that especially the way I learned it as a Christian is that it wasn't quite said that way at all.
No.
Shut up, blank your mind out. It was. I'm trying to think of the language that I would have been taught. You mean need to be submissive and just do what your husband wants and not have not really think about the things that are important to you also. It kind of, in a sense, encouraged not seeing what was going on and not really being a choice maker in the process. And what that does is it keeps me from being a person who has to grow up in the context of relationships. So it's important for me. I'm headed toward God. I want to go toward God. But how do I do that is important. Not through denial, not through shutting up and blanking it out, but through working through a process.
Right. Yeah. There's a contradiction between if someone says I'm really wanting to pursue goodness and obedience to God and truth and I want to live my life in the light of truth and then turn around and not want to think about their life and not want to understand what's going on and not see with wise eyes what reality is all about. Those are in conflict with each other. One who is obeying with a kind of counterfeit robot obedience is not really obeying. That's not obedience. So, I mean, that's a good point.
And people don't naturally understand how to not do this counterfeit kind of obedience. I think we naturally, it's more easy, it keeps things... I mean, people have different strategies of working with relationships, but for some people it's very easy just to be complacent, just to always compromise, even when they could really contribute by not just compromise, but give up what's important to them, to be compliant. For them, maybe it looks very loving, but perhaps they're just out of fear of what might happen if they asserted themselves at all or told what they thought or had their own opinions.
Mm-hmm.
They might be afraid that the person would leave. And so it's they've risen it to a level, this kind of behavior to a level of being loving and good, but the reality is it's not. They're not pursuing God. They're pursuing probably they're in this spiritual battle and they're losing it.
Right, exactly. That's the key. I understand what you're saying. I would resist. I would prefer to articulate it by saying, not by saying submit, compromise. I can't remember the other language we were using, but to just face into the command to submit, to compromise, to be flexible, to be patient, to be kind. Those are good commandments. Those are good exhortations. Those are not bad exhortations. But what we have to recognize is that to just shut up and take it is not necessarily submitting. And to just stuff it and allow someone to walk over me is not necessarily being flexible or being accommodating or whatever. That if it doesn't emerge from inside, if it's not something authentic from inside, then it's not the real article. It's some kind of counterfeit, some kind of shoddy, poor imitation that doesn't mean the same thing and doesn't have the same effect in our relationships.
If it doesn't,
it has to be real.
Well, it can be real in the sense that I'm just being submissive. And I have to go back. I really agree with you. Those are good exhortations, that I should be submissive, that I should compromise, that I should be humble, that I should sometimes very much accommodate. But the way we've defined those things, I think, is what you're bringing out. Sometimes it's not at all loving. We've defined them in ways that are hurtful very often, as opposed to being loving.
Yeah, because they're inauthentic. They really are not authentic.
Well, they could be authentic in the sense that it comes from the inside, and that from the inside, I'm very afraid of asserting myself at all, and so I won't say anything to you. That comes from the inside. It's authentic, fearful response, but it isn't a loving thing. I'm doing it. I need to look at my motives here. Am I doing it because I'm afraid of the other person's response, or am I doing it because I think it's really a good and right thing to do, even though I may suffer some discomfort or some pain or some loss in the midst of making this decision?
Yeah, it's authentic. It's a real response. It's a real strategy that I've adopted. It's the way I'm really interacting with the world. But it's not really obedience to those exhortations in the sense that it's not authentic submission. It's not authentic flexibility or whatever. Now, let me give you an example. Last week I talked about how, as an early Christian, how contemptuous I was. But I also commented on, in interacting with anybody in my high school, I think I would have been kind. I would have been considerate. I mean, outwardly, I was treating them respectfully. But the fact of the matter is, I knew deep down inside, I had no respect for these people. I was pretending like I respected them by my words and by actions, but my actual attitude deep down inside was not respectful. Now, if someone had come along and said, "The Bible says, Jack, don't be contemptuous," was I obeying that commandment or was I not obeying that commandment? I would say no. I was not obeying that commandment at all. I was full of contempt for other people who I thought were my moral inferiors. So there's more to obedience than just some kind of formulaic behavior that it's asking me to engage in. It's something that has to emerge from a heart that is true, that is good, and is wise. If not, then it's not really obedience. It's not really the real article. And it's understandable why people gravitate toward formulaic behavioral responses. It's because if we are not really being sanctified, or we're not at that level of sanctification yet, and we live in a culture that says, look, this has to be there, this is the way people are supposed to be, but I'm not being that kind of person, and I just am not, then we would want to substitute a behavior that maybe could pass for that. it's very understandable that we do that, but what we have to understand is that that's not authentic, it's not sanctification, it's not obedience, it's not nothing of any ultimate value. It's just what the Bible calls hypocrisy. It's trying to live out the behavior of a person who is that kind of person, but it's not actually being that kind of person.
So what does a person do, and I think I might answer my own question, who really does feel contemptuous toward another person, what do? Do they just go ahead and be contemptuous and not be nice like you were trying to be? No, that's not the answer.
No.
But I think we need to realize, okay, I'm contemptuous toward this person. I need to work with that. And in the meantime, I need to be kind toward you.
Right.
But that's a very different thing. Recognizing what's really going on in my heart and at the same time making a choice to try and be as respectful and kind to you as I possibly can. And I think where you went wrong, as you described it last week in our program, is you really thought that you were better than the other person. And so there wasn't really a conflict in you about your outward behavior and what was really going on in the inside.
Right. So I would treat someone with respect and kindness and then walk away patting myself on the back for being such a great guy, for being so loving. An authentic response, a responsible response, would have been for me to treat them as I did, with kindness and respect, speak respectfully, speak kindly, then turn around and ask God for forgiveness for the contempt in my heart, God, and to save me from it. God, forgive me for being such a self-righteous, contemptuous person. God, sanctify me, change me.
And I would even...
And that's what I wasn't doing at the time.
Right. Right, and I think that's what's really hard to do, and it's a miracle that we would come to see ourselves, as you described last week and as you're talking a little bit about now, as we really are, especially when other people see us as really nice guys. I've not really had that problem much in my life for other people to see me as a nice guy, because I usually come off a little bit rough around the edges, so I can't get away with that quite as easily as you did. You just look like a nice guy, but let me tell everybody he really is, and I've seen him really bark sometimes. But, I think that Jack is probably one of the people who is very, very controlled. You're very, very controlled in your life in terms of trying to be kind to people. There is definitely, absolutely a place where we need to turn to God then and say, God, forgive me. I am being this way, even though on the outside I am, and rightly so, trying to be kind and respectful to another person. A step further that I would take it is, if I am really contemptuous of another person, if, using the language that we used in our last program, if I am really bugged by another person, I think there is a lot of learning and growing that can take place by saying, there's this red flag that I need to look at here. There's this something that's triggering me to really want to be contemptuous toward this person. Maybe I need to have a greater self-understanding about this. It will help me in the future perhaps not to be as contemptuous, or at least to understand the other person better, understand myself better, eventually kind of build upon insight upon insight that will help me become a more loving person. So it's very important to do that. Red flags help me, red flags like that help me grow up. And if I just end it with, God, I really want your forgiveness, if that's the only place I go, I think I'm missing out on some of that. Now, obviously, I can't do it every time. But for an example, I was talking to my dad the other day, and he was giving me an example of a family and talking about them and giving his impression of this family that I didn't know. He was just being... He just had a particular perspective about a particular type of family, a perspective that I strongly disagree with. Well, if I was talking to another friend, I would be, other than my father, that perspective about that kind of family would kind of bother me some, but not a great deal, and I would have a lot of respect for them. I'd talk to them about it. I'd maybe get some insight into how they were thinking, maybe learn a little bit from them. Maybe they would not even know that I had that my perspective, depending on on the flow of the conversation if they were interested in knowing about it, or if it really even made sense for me to bring mine in. I would have a great deal of grace toward them, often, particularly as a counselor, I would. Something happens to me in the counseling room where I am kind of a nice person. I mean, I'm actually quite confrontive. On the other hand, I have really worked at trying to take in what other people say, and I think I'm pretty good at it. But now, here I am, not only am I not with a friend, but I'm with my father, with family member, and I jumped all over the guy. I mean, I didn't hardly give him place to say what he wanted to say, and I just really put him off. And I mean, I wasn't, not in a mean way, but in a very confrontive, told him what I thought, told him pretty much that he was pretty out to lunch in his perspective. In no uncertain terms, I told him that for quite a while, actually. So,
kept at him.
Poor Dad. Sorry, Dad. So, what I could do is just say, oh, gee, God, forgive me, that's wrong. And that's true, it's wrong, and I really feel bad that I can't just, I didn't just have more self-control. But there's more for me to get out of this. Why do I have such a difficult time with my dad? And where it comes back to is, in thinking about this, is I really want my dad to see and understand me. He doesn't have a natural affinity to do that. He's a businessman. I'm a people helper. We have very different worldviews. We have very different values in some respects. And I want him, when I hear a value or a worldview that's so different than mine, I just want to jump all over him because I want him to come alongside me where it doesn't matter as much with other people that they come alongside me, but I want him to come and join me in this place that I would feel very loved. And I need to be willing to give that up.
Mm-hmm.
I need to let him be him, him that will probably never join me in this place that's so powerfully important to me that I've embraced with all of my life. He's not going to come here. And every time I see myself do that, I have to go back and say, okay, Christine, what's going on? And it gives me an opportunity to say, accept him who he is, because Christine, what you're doing to him is the same thing that you're challenging him, not saying it directly, as doing to you.
I don't understand that last statement. How is it the same?
I'm trying to change him to be,
right,
ultimately,
right.
We're trying to change each other to be more like ourselves, because we're very different, and he would like me to understand life from his perspective much better, and I would like him to accept life from my perspective. And my issue is, I want him to do that. I'm not going to speak for him, but I want him to do that because it's so important for me to be loved by my dad in that way, i.e. to be understood. And it just feels so connected to be understood by another person and so disconnected to not be understood.
And don't you think that's particularly true if that other person is your father?
Oh, yeah, that's my point. That's one of my points.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Where it's not as important that a person that
some
I'm not in much
some neighbor.
Relationship with. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so remind me, the original point then that the example was illustrating was, I mean, it was the importance of, I mean, you brought it up in the context of it's not enough to walk away in the example that I gave of holding someone in contempt and yet treating them respectfully and treating them kindly, but walking away, but really being contemptuous, that the right thing for me to do in a situation like that, if my respect cannot be authentic and I can only act respectful, I need to walk away saying, God, forgive me, God, change me, God, sanctify me. And I think the point you were making is it's not quite that easy or not quite that simple or...
And what's more, I ask God to change me, and I ask His forgiveness, and I ask His forgiveness even in just recognizing that I'm wrong here, but then carry it on and try and maybe have use this as an opportunity to see myself better, to grow up, to be able to ultimately do what the scripture says, and that's love another person. Have compassion for them. For my father, I need to have, in this example, I need to have more compassion for him. It's out of my grabbing on to something that I really want for him to understand me that I'm not loving him. And if I see that, I can work toward loving him better in a very practical way. I can say, okay, Christine, he's not going to be like you. He's not like you. You need to stop expecting that. And you know what? It's not loving to try and get him to do that. Because I can get real self-righteous and say, you know, he really ought to get this. It would be really important for him. If he saw life in this way, it would really help him in relationships. Well, that's my justification for not really loving him. So if I have some insight about what's going on, it can help me love him better. Have I lost you, Jack?
No, I think I'm following you. But only, I mean, that's only true if I make another good choice, another right choice. I mean, I could come to understand that what really bugs me here is that this is my father, and I have this really significant need and desire to be appreciated, acknowledged, valued by my own father. So damn him for not appreciating me.
Yeah.
I mean, I should make that choice instead.
Yeah, yeah.
And continue the same behavior.
Well,
with even more energy and more
gusto.
More justification, you know.
Right, right.
But by understanding what's going on, then I'm faced with a choice here. I may not get what I want here. I may not be able to have the kind of regard, respect, appreciation, acknowledgement from my father that any child in this world wants from their father. That may be something I'm going to live my whole life without.
Yeah.
What am I going to do about that?
Am I going to face into the loss there?
Right.
To the grief there? Or am I going to go and blame him more, become more self-righteous? And yeah, that's blame him more, become self-righteous is falling back into those, you know, the dark forces that we were talking about out of the verses in Ephesians 6. Or am I going to embrace what might be incredibly painful for me? And I think very often we don't want to embrace what's painful for us.
Right.
We'd rather go in another direction and say, well, that person should be this way, so I am justified in not doing whatever.
Right.
But I think the reality is I just don't want to feel the discomfort. It's just really tough for me. But, you know, this is happening in relationships all the time. Very often it's between, am I willing to do the necessary grief of life because I don't get everything I want, or am I going to become a person who's self-righteous and contemptuous and who is falling in to these powers of darkness?
What was a little bit confusing to me was, let's come back to my example of my contempt. Some things require further explanation. It seems like other things don't require further explanation. My contempt, in my mind, doesn't really require any further explanation. Your scenario does require further explanation. Let me be specific. When I if I were to ask myself, why do I feel contempt for these people? It seems to me that the answer, because you are a self-righteous human being and it's coming out of the evil of your heart, is adequate. I mean, that really does explain exactly what was going on there. I'm not unusually contemptuous towards some people rather than others. I was just kind of contemptuous toward anyone that I perceived to be my moral inferior. It was really clearly an attitude of my own heart with respect to me that was an evil and unbelieving attitude that was the problem. And there's really nothing more particularly to say about that. That's just a common human problem. I see it all the time. There's lots of people like me. It's just sort of endemic to being a sinful human being in this world that self-righteousness is one of the places that we go. And it seems to me it doesn't demand any further explanation. The situation with your father is a little bit different, because why is it that you react so strongly with your father and not your neighbor in the same situation? Well, there's more to be explained. There's a mystery there that needs to be solved. And to really understand what's going on, you have to understand the unique relationship that you have with your father.
And there's also, am I interrupting you?
No, that's fine.
Also, I have this just generic sinfulness that's coming out in this situation toward my father. just that I shared with you in your generic sinfulness of having contempt for people in general.
Mm-hmm.
So both of them have that overlap.
Yeah, that's kind of a foundation for all of our... Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's our foundation.
Yeah.
But Jack, I wouldn't necessarily say that yours has nowhere else to go. It may not, but let me add a little bit more here. Very often, when somebody has a sense of moral superiority, they're very self-righteous generally toward other people, certainly that's part of our sinfulness, that we just kind of have that toward other people. But when it's pronounced, the question that comes into my mind is, moral superiority usually often comes out of a sense of feeling less than or morally inferior, or just an inferior person generally. So that would be something that I would want to question. This looks like it's so important for me to be better than other people. What's really going on with me? That could lead me into a discussion with myself and with God that could help me even learn more. And I wouldn't leave that discussion alone. I wouldn't have a foregone conclusion, but I think it's a good one to have.
Yeah, okay. My only concern is that, and I think this is an impression that people get of psychology in particular.
I knew this was coming, Jack. it always comes with you.
Sometimes, let's see, how should I put it? Sometimes psychology can be presented in such a way that things are not what they appear to be on the surface, which is true. Things are not always what they appear to be on the surface. But sometimes psychology is presented in such a way that that's always true. No matter how deep you get, there's always more. And
it can't just be, you're saying it can't just be, I'm a sinful person and I'm just acting out of that tendency to be selfish.
Yeah, or let's take the example of your relationship with your father. You know, what if I say, well, let's ask the question, why should it be so important what your father thinks of you? Well, there may be more to be said about this, but that's not altogether a startling thing, right? I mean, isn't there something built in? Isn't there something God-given? Isn't there something about the way God has created human beings that children naturally have a God-given need to be respected by their parents? At least it would seem to be the case because it's so universal. It's not idiosyncratic to you. You're not the only person in the world who cares what their father thinks of them.
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying?
I absolutely do. But Jack, the only way, not the only way, but a way that I get to even seeing, oh, I get what's going on here. When I'm arguing with my dad about how he sees his family, and it isn't really about how he sees his family. I mean, it's about me wanting him to be on the same plane with me.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's very idiosyncratic, sure. But I didn't get there from that conversation. I had to look at, okay, why, Christine, did you have to... I mean, it wasn't automatic. Why did you have to... What makes such a big deal of this? Well, oh, I get it. That's what's going on. Okay, let's go back to what you need to be doing in relationship with him. Not being argumentative. You can talk to him about your opinions and your thoughts, but you need to just... you know, lose some of the edge. And so I didn't come to it easily.
No, I understand. I mean, in that what you didn't come to easily is the realization that this is about my relationship with my father, that's what this is really about.
Right.
Yeah,
and
that takes some real honesty. It takes mostly honesty, because in a situation like that, my first temptation is if my wife or somebody says, why are you reacting so strongly? My first temptation is, I'm not reacting strongly.
Or I'm reacting strongly because you're being such a jerk.
Yeah, I deflect it. I really don't want to face into the fact that something is really getting to me. Something is really a problem for me here. And so it's having the courage to say, yes, this is an inordinate response, isn't it? I mean, given the actual content of our conversation, what's going on, there really is a mystery here, isn't there? There really is something that raises this big question mark about why is this going on the way it's going on? Why is what's happening? And being willing to acknowledge the question is a huge thing. All I'm saying is there comes a point where I mean, we have to allow for different kinds of answers to that question. Why is this such an issue for me in this case? Well, because it's about my relationship with my father. Now, if someone asks the further question, well, why should you care what your father thinks? That's not a real question. Why would I care what my father thinks? Name somebody who doesn't.
Well,
that would be my response.
That could be misconstrued as a different question. Why do I care that my father loves me? Is different than what my father thinks.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. That's what I meant.
Right.
Is why would it be of concern to you that your father value you and respect you and love you? Why would you care about that?
And then to go and question that ad nauseum
is a non-question. Is what I'm saying.
That's where you're going.
Exactly.
Okay. So I think we're the same level there.
Right.
But it does. I think we leave out the courage of asking
honest and humble
questions.
That's true.
And we get lost about what the issues really are when we don't ask the questions. In this example you used kind of quickly here, was you could just think that your wife is just being stupid, or she's she's to blame or whatever, and that's why you had to have this response after all. She's being an idiot here. And to just leave it there doesn't help you get anywhere in your relationship with her or in the growing up process yourself. And those kind of triggers, Jack, are going on for us all the time. And we need to constantly, I don't want to say constantly, because someone's going to say, you mean you stop at every interaction. You don't stop at every interaction with somebody. But very often in our lives, we need to really understand what the issues are. They're not always apparent on the surface.
Yeah.
And we're fighting a battle about something that's not really what it's about.
Right. I mean, you would know better than I about how clueless we can be. I can only speak from my own experience. My battle is not to notice when something is requiring my attention. Those things really just jump out at me.
It's obvious to you.
It's obvious to me, but the problem, my struggle, is being willing to acknowledge what's obvious to me. That's my struggle. In other words, see, there's two ways I could look at my life. I could look at my life as every little word that comes out of my mouth, every action is a secret code for something deeper. I could look at life that way. Or there are just these things that are blatantly obvious that they are so out of proportion or so bizarre or so odd, the things that I do, the things that I think, the ways that I react, they're just so odd that they should stop me in my tracks and go, Jack, where is that coming from? What's that all about? It's not that they're not obvious, but I'm not willing to acknowledge the obvious oftentimes.
Well,
and I want to just kind of plow right past it and ignore it and not pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I see the problem for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's probably the bigger problem for you. I think that for lots of people, it's hard just to see it. It isn't obvious.
Okay.
They justify their behavior. Lots of us justify our behavior to the extent over the years that we don't even see that it's problematic anymore. We've become hardened to that.
So it doesn't even seem odd or out of proportion or...
It might seem necessary. It might seem right. It might seem... I mean, people maybe even have done it for their own survival. Lots of people I work with have learned to lie to themselves. And people who consider themselves to be very honest have had to lie to themselves significantly, or lie about their past significantly, in order to survive in their life. So a lot of the work I do is helping people even be aware of the issues that are going on in their lives. Or, like you were talking about yourself as being a person who was very contemptuous, but you saw yourself as really being better than other people. Well, you didn't see that you were contemptuous at that time, and that's what happens for a lot of us. We don't even see the problem. We see the results in our life as maybe being something good or something favorable, and so we just kind of drop the question. And lots of times, the problems that are going on in our life are not necessarily, we can't really see directly. Somebody who has learned to lie to themselves about perhaps their history or about who they really are, in order to survive perhaps some kind of heinous abuse or some kind of situation that was impossible to talk about at one point, maybe very very functional in many areas of their life, but they'll come in and they'll talk about being bulimic or being going into shops and stealing things or being very compulsive about some area of their life. They don't see a connector at all. And so there has to be a lot of looking at issues underneath what's typically looked at in order to find out what really is the problem going on in my life so that they can then come out of their blindness and be able to face it directly.
Okay, but now that's a situation, though, where ultimately what's happening is what I have described. It's come to their attention that their compulsion to steal, for example, is odd, is behavior that really...
But they wouldn't call... Yes, but there's other behavior that I would call very odd.
That they don't see?
They don't see at all.
Okay.
It just become obvious enough that they see these areas. They're a Christian, but what they're doing is going to store and stealing things. Wait a minute, that doesn't work. Well, for you and I, if we got underneath their hidden life a little bit, it would become very clear and very obvious. But to show that to people is hard, because mm-hmm. even when I'm showing them a mirror of themselves, they don't necessarily see it.
Mm-hmm.
So we become people who become, you know, one of our ailments is that we're very, very blind, Jack. And we don't know the questions to ask ourselves very often in order to be able to see. We're fortunate if we have friends around who can come up to us and ask us questions, or people who are interacting with us in a level that's very real and very authentic that can help us have an accurate perspective of ourselves. Like a friend, if I was going off about how my dad didn't get what was going on in our conversation, a good friend would say, "Christine, you know, you really seem like you're having a big reaction to this." And to help me kind of enter into what's really going on, and it could take 5 minutes or I could deflect it, and it could take my whole life. I have learned to ask some questions that I think are very important. "Christine, why do you have this kind of a reaction? You need to learn from this." I would like to communicate that to other people. I would like this radio program and relationships to carry that message. It's a very, very important one to me, Jack, that we get underneath what's going on the surface and really get through some of our blindness, because it really keeps us from experiencing the love of God very often and being able to love other people and to be able to live comfortably with ourselves. Really, really important. So as we're entering into this, I know that you have some hesitation, because it sounds kind of psychological to you. And I think it may sound psychological to a lot of people, and I'd like, in our conversations about relationships, to make this more easily understood, something that people can walk with, rather than automatically fight or automatically see as something just psychological. I think that it is the stuff of the Christian life. It is the stuff of an honest life. It is the stuff of a person who mourns and grieves. And the Beatitudes say, "Blessed is the man who mourns, for his is the kingdom of heaven." Did I quote it right?
No, he will be comforted. Blessed
are those who... Okay. But to come to where we need to come to, we need to have some questions to ask. And your point was, and it needs to be backed up by, which direction do I really want to go in? Do I want to be seduced by the powers of darkness? Do I want to give in to that? Or do I want to really pursue goodness and righteousness? Do I want to pursue God? And if I do, how do I go about doing that? I can't just do it. It doesn't come naturally. It's a work against the powers of darkness and toward light. And I have to work and work and work to keep headed in the direction of what God wants, who God is, and to be developing the kind of faith that He wants for me.
Yeah, I think that's all right. I would just add one little thing. As Paul says, "Work out your own salvation in fear and trembling, for God is at work in you." Mm. Ultimately, all of our work is of no avail if God is not work in us. I don't care what it is. I don't care what work we're doing. It's either authentic and real or not, depending upon whether it's the Spirit of God Himself transforming us, giving us the courage, giving us the honesty, giving us the purity of heart. If He's not doing it, then it's all going to be just so much counterfeit. there's even counterfeit honesty. There's even counterfeit transparency. There's even counterfeit
humility.
Humility, yeah. All that stuff can be counterfeited and is ultimately of no avail. But you're right, that how does my sanctification happen as the Spirit of God works in me? What does that look like? It looks like me facing real questions and finding the real answers to those real questions and coming to the kind of self-knowledge that allows me to live my life in the light of what's true and the truth itself.
Well said.
Thanks.
Martin Luther said, "The Christian life can sometimes look like a drunk man riding a horse. He falls off on one side, gets back on, and then, trying not to fall off again, falls off the other side." On the one hand, Christians may believe so strongly that salvation comes by faith, they forget the importance of obedience to God. On the other hand, an emphasis on obedience can lead to legalism and pride. And in the midst of this struggle, many Christians find themselves asking, "Why is there still so much moral weakness in my life? Can I be a Christian if I still struggle with sin?" Ron Julian's new book, Righteous Sinners, takes a fresh look at these very real questions. If you've ever struggled with your own moral weaknesses, if you've ever looked in the mirror and wondered whether a believer was staring back at you, if you've ever felt a twinge of terror while reading, "Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter into the kingdom of heaven," then this book is for you. Look for Mackenzie staff member Ron Julian's book, Righteous Sinners, in a bookstore near you.
One of the series that has been really valuable to people, we've gotten a lot of requests for, is the singleness series. In fact, Jack, some of the people who have ordered the singleness tapes have said, "Wow, this is just as good for marriage." And in fact, sometimes when people want to hear about marriage, I'll give them the singleness tapes even before our marriage tapes, because they, I think they really did hit at some core issues. People who have been really helped by our ministry have sometimes sent in donations. And we certainly appreciate that. We covet your consideration of supporting us, supporting this program so that we can continue to broadcast it. We have, the last couple of weeks, tried to read some of the letters that people have sent who have been appreciative of the program, who have, who are supporting it, and who just have expressed their interest. So here's just a short letter. "Please let Christine and Jack know what a blessing their program is to so many of us in Northern California. Christianity at Work is truly a unique ministry. As others have expressed before, Jack and Christine address so many issues that so many of God's children are afraid or ashamed to discuss. Please know I will continue to pray for your broadcast ministry." One thing she says here is that Christianity at Work is truly a unique ministry. And what we tried to do when we started this ministry was to not make it like everything else, but to try and, through our discussion format and through the discussion of issues in our own lives and through a thorough look at the scriptures, that we can offer something that is unique and especially helpful to people in a world where there's few answers and a lot of questions. And once again, to continue this broadcast ministry that we are thoroughly delighted to be doing and thoroughly grateful, and I think for both of us, humbled for the opportunity, we do ask you guys to consider thinking about if you want to contribute financially, and do it today. Think about it today and consider sending in a contribution.
You have been listening to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center. If you would like a free copy of this program, would like to order other programs, or want to know more about Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College, please call us at 541-485-4801. Again, that's area code 541-485-4801. You can write us at 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. And you may also find us on the net at www.mackenziestudycenter.org. Tapes can be purchased with check or Visa card. If you desire to support the ministry of Mackenzie Study Center, your gift will be entirely tax deductible. Please mail your check to Mackenzie Study Center. Again, 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. The telephone number again, 541-485-4801. Now, on behalf of Dr. Jack Crabtree, Christine Barber, and the other staff of McKenzie Study Center, thank you for listening.